The Broad Pod, broadening the spectrum of voices in science fiction, fantasy, horror, and all the realms in between.
Welcome to the June episode of The Broad Pod. My name is Trisha Wooldridge, and I'll be your hostess for this month. I'm a member of the Broad Universe Motherboard, and you can find me at www.anovelfriend.com. and in the latest Badass Fairies anthology, In All Their Glory. Who doesn't need a good laugh now and again? The Broads reading for you today know the importance of good humor, and share with you laughs of all sizes and kinds. You may want to be careful with your drink if you're by your computer or driving. I hear it's not healthy to snarf on keyboards or dashboards.
My name is Jody Lynn Nye. I write fantasy and science fiction books and short stories. This is an excerpt from my story, Howl, which appears in the humorous Werewolves in Suburbia anthology, Strip Mauled, edited by Esther Friesner and published by Bain Books in 2009. Bradley woke with a start and scanned the bed for Angela's familiar body that ought to have been there beside him, half curled on her side under the light quilt. She wasn't there. He remembered again. 3 more days until his family returned. He tried to settle down, but he was too restless. It felt as if the sheet was rucked up under his rear end. He wriggled to settle the lump. It wouldn't smooth out. The light of the full moon shone between the bedroom curtains. He kicked off the comforter. He had to get out of the bedclothes. They were stifling. Bradley fumbled for the bedroom light. Ah! Someone was in the room with him. Who are you? He screamed at the black-bearded man. The other's mouth moved at the same time his did. The intruder was wearing his boxer shorts. He realized suddenly he was looking at his own reflection. No! Bradley cried. He must still be dreaming. He slapped his hands against his body, refusing to believe in the black hair that covered him everywhere except his eyes, lips, and palms. He flung himself off the bed, trying to run away from his horrible image, but it seemed that the whole house was full of mirrors and shiny surfaces. The hairy man leaped out at him again and again. Bradley stumbled down the stairs, through the living room and the kitchen, and out into the night. He had to get away from the nightmare. He raced along the street, covering ground faster than he ever could in the daylight. Bradley looked down to see curving claws between his toes. His feet looked twice as long as usual. Something slapped him in the backside. He glanced behind and saw a 2-foot-long tail. Run away! His brain shrieked. He plunged in between houses, crashing through bushes and trees, trampling garden plots. The beam of the streetlight at the corner struck glints off the shining hair on his hands and arms. To get away from the sight, he dashed across the street and into the forest preserve. Part of his mind shouted at him that the preserve closed at sunset. Trespassing on state land wasn't allowed. The rest of him, the wild part, laughed at restraint. It forced him to open up his stride until he was running flat out across the prairie. He started laughing. The pure adrenaline exhilarated him. He felt giddy. He dropped to all fours and galloped, leaping over streams and paths, bounding over benches. Bradley found an open patch of grass and rolled around on it. That felt good. He flipped over and ran in a circle, chasing the tail. It eluded his snapping jaws. What had happened to him? What was he? All he could think over and over again was werewolf. The spooky books his son loved to read at night talked about mystical transformation, the fear of silver bullets, and how the man-wolf beast howled at the moon. Maybe he had turned into a werewolf, but he wouldn't do that. He paused, the tail swinging out of reach. Why not? Bradley sat down on his haunches, cleared his throat, pointed his nose toward the moon, and launched into the best howl he could muster. Ow! The mournful sound was so at odds with how good he felt that he started laughing in the middle of it. He pulled himself together. No, seriously, he told himself. Howl. He took another breath. Oh! That was better. With a little practice, he could be really good at it. His legs began to twitch. He had to run some more. Flipping onto his long feet, he ran, loving every mile. He suddenly knew the secret they never talked about in any of the horror movies or TV shows or books. Being a werewolf was so much fun. Bradley sped up a hill, his pads pounding on the dirt path. A browsing deer, he surprised, leaped up and away from him. The scent excited him. He fell into pursuit, racing after its shape in the cold blue moonlight. He had an urge to bury his teeth in its throat. He wanted the taste of its blood on his tongue. The deer wasn't waiting around to satisfy his urges. It increased its lead on him by lengths, leaping effortlessly over park benches and around the reeking outhouses. Bradley galloped his tail straight out behind him. He gave it all he could, even pulling within 10 feet of it, but the deer disappeared into the trees. Bradley watched it go. The wild part of him felt dismay. He tottered back into the woods. He was exhausted, and his feet and palms hurt. Gingerly, Bradley picked his way back to a park bench and curled up underneath it in the comforting dark. Just a short rest, he told himself. All right, mister, a harsh voice roused him out of sleep. I suppose you're going to tell me your prescription medications made you sleepwalk, huh? Get up! Bradley blinked at a pink sky and a black silhouette shining a yellow circle of light in his face. The police officer grabbed him by the arm and hauled him to his feet. Bradley realized with a start that the black fur that had covered him was gone, as was most of the pair of underpants he had been wearing when he left home. Modesty was just barely preserved by the scrap of cloth around his belly. The rest of his shorts had been torn to shreds by the bushes. His skin was covered with scratches and bruises. "I'm all right, officer," he said, straightening his back to try and look dignified. Obviously, he failed. "Don't need to go to the emergency room?" the officer asked. "Did somebody dump you here?" No, Bradley said. I sometimes say sleepwalk. The policeman shook his head as though disappointed. Bradley wished he sounded more original, but he didn't want to be branded a kook. No one would believe he had been transformed into a werewolf. In the cold light of dawn, he didn't completely believe it himself. "Come on," the officer sighed. "Get in the cruiser. I'll take you home." Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this excerpt from Howl. Please see my other books and stories on my website, jodynye.com.
Hello, my name is Elisa Malcone. I'm going to read you two poems. The first poem, Neighbors, is a bit of ghoulish humor that appears in Vampire Verse, that's V-A-M-P-Y-R Verse, out from Popcorn Press. The anthology can be ordered at Popcorn Press, that's one word, .com. Neighbors. Her daughter trails a mess along the floor, red sticky lines upon linoleum, her shampooed carpet darkening with blood. The latest playmate, dragged through open door, drops lifeless while the TV blares, a dumb and shattered doll, her sneakers caked in mud. How many times have I told you to feed at Stacy's house on cleaning day? That girl is asking for the belt. And wash your clothes! No parent class addressed vampiric need. Her kinfolk all but banished from the world to pale suburban tracts that no one knows except for prey the school bus leaves behind, enticed by candy, games, a pretty yard, the trappings of the kind and neighborly. Her daughter Bess sucks from the neck, half blind with hunger. Being different is so hard. You can't keep friends, and all the family's a bunch of creeps, Aunt Stacy most of all. One more blind date with Ghoul and Bess will scream. But still, the lady cooks a wicked stew. And maybe, when the new term starts this fall, these piles of corpses will have been a dream. Or maybe someone's rents will get a clue and send SWAT teams to march across the lawn, and they will find no mirrors in the house, and they will find the flower beds and dig. Bess tosses out her musings with a yawn. She wipes her mouth, pulls off her gory blouse. Her mother shouldn't think she's such a pig. She touches lace on her new bra, B-cup. Her body's changing, and she wonders how. Maturity will make its own demands. "I'm done," she calls. "Don't worry, I'll clean up. I'll stick the brain inside the fridge right now." And, conscientiously, she licks her hands. The second poem is a terza rima called Eye of the Beholder, which appeared in the July-August 2007 issue of Starline, the Journal of the Science Fiction Poetry Association. You can find the association at sfpoetry.com. Eye of the Beholder. The universe is colored beige, the spectrographic data show. The stellar storms, the burning rage of eons yield a total glow of such a mediocre hue we almost did not want to know. Its quest to be forever true led science in its dignity to say, "We're wrong. It isn't blue that rules the heavens as we thought, but this more polyester tint, 8-track of color. Astronauts will show you vistas. We have lint." And yet, to modest human sight that spies our miracles by dint of telescopes that pierce the night to bring us novas, nebulae, and infrared and X-ray light, a palette forms that sets us free from limitations quantified, where we can glimpse infinity, and all the rainbows here reside. You can find publications, news, workshops, writings, and other info on my website. Do a web search on my name, Elisa Malcone, that's spelled E-L-I-S-S-A-M-A-L-C-O-H-N, or do a web search on Malcone's World. Thanks for listening.
Hello, my name is Tracy S. Morris, and I'm the author of the Tranquility series. Today I will be reading from the newest book in the series, Bride of Tranquility. Bride of Tranquility is a murder mystery set in a haunted hotel during a Renaissance wedding. The novel contains elements of humor, satire, farce, and magic realism. In this scene, two of the book's main protagonists, Jake, the town sheriff with extremely good luck, and Rachel, the town's vet who can speak with animals, are meeting with their wedding planner to finalize plans for the wedding. But Jake's luck may be at an end when he meets their faux French wedding planner, Lord Valentine, and his retinue. The room was huge, with floor-to-ceiling windows along one wall and the same polished pine covering the floor and trimming the wall. "Isn't it gorgeous, Jake?" Rachel asked. Jake was more interested in all the people already in the room. 6 of them, at $100 a person. "Who are all these people?" He hugged the corner as he looked around the room like a bobble-headed doll. "My retinue," Lord Valentine said with an expansive gesture. "I thought you said there were 3 of them." Lord Valentine stopped, counted on his fingers, and then counted the noses of the people in the room. Then he smiled toothily at Jake. "Ha! A mere trifle." Jake shook his head. "Let it go, Jake." Rachel cocked a hip and put a hand on it. "If Lord Valentine thinks we need all these people to help us, then who are we to argue?" "Only the folks paying the bill," Jake muttered. "La!" Lord Valentine clasped his hands. He moved to stand between a heavy-set couple that looked to Jake like they belonged in a movie about King Henry VIII. "This is Lady Margaret and the Duke of Earl." Jake blinked. "Wait, wasn't that?" "Yes, yes, moving right along." Lord Valentine's expression pleaded with Jake not to ask. Jake shrugged. As far as he was concerned, Val had earned a free pass by smoothing things over with Rachel. "Next, we have Lord Dog and Lady Elaine." Lord Valentine stood next to a couple who looked like they'd just escaped from the set of the Three Musketeers. "Lord Dog?" "It's a work in progress," Lord Doug said. "I'm actually thinking of changing it to..." "No time, no time, moving along." Lord Valentine cut him off with an impatient wave. He put his arm around a man in a pirate's hat. "This is Captain Morgan of the Jolly Pirate." "Arr," Captain Morgan nodded to them. Jake gave the captain a cautious look. "And he is the best bartender that ever lived," Captain Morgan said with a wink. "You do know we live in a dry county, don't you?" Jake said. "Arr?" Captain Morgan looked surprised. "And that I'm the town's cop?" "Not to worry, matey. I'll see that your wedding be dry, insofar as anyone would notice." "Now listen," Jake said. "And moving right along," Lord Valentine interrupted before Jake could launch into a tirade. He pointed at a gentleman in a Viking-style horned helmet. "This is Monk." Monk leered at Rachel. "Pleased to meet ya." Jake pulled Lord Valentine aside. "Wait a minute. He's part of your group?" Lord Valentine gave him a look that said that Monk was definitely part of the group. "But of course." "Well, he's not very Renaissance-y, is he?" "We need Monk for the heavy lifting." "You're not going to wear the horns during the ceremony, are you?" Rachel asked with a frown. Monk looked offended. "They're traditional." "Traditionally what?" Rachel crossed her arms. Lord Valentine made a placating gesture with his hands. "We typically let monk keep track of les enfants during the ceremonies." "You're kidding, right?" Jake looked up at the behemoth in the Viking getup. "He watches kids?" "Oh, eh," Lord Valentine said. "He's most effective with the ring toss, and if he'll tie ribbons to his helm, he is a quite an enjoyable maypole." Thank you for listening. Bride of Tranquility is the second book in the Tranquility series. It is a 2010 finalist for a Darrell Award from the Mid-South Science Fiction and Fantasy Society. Both novels are available from Yard Dog Press at www.yarddogpress.com. You can find me, Tracy S. Morris, at www.tracysmorris.com.
Hi, this is Jalita Clegg. I hope you enjoy my very silly, very short stories in this broad podcast for June. If you go to my website, www.jalitac.com, that's www.jalitac.com, you can find links to all of my other projects, including my novel, Nexus Point. I have several short stories up in my downloads section, ranging from very serious to very silly. I hope you enjoy.
Let There Be Light, from the Book of Squid, Chapter 33. And behold, in those days there was no light, only darkness. Yea, such utter darkness that there was no light. All was darkness. And there was also coldness. Yea, coldness such that it was very cold. And lo, a voice cried out in the darkness and the cold, saying, Let there be light. And there was light of such glorious brightness that the darkness was no more. And behold, the light banished the cold also. And a voice was heard, saying, Do you want the cherry or the grape popsicle? And the one who had commanded the light to come forth was taken by the voice. And the light and warmth went also with the one who had spoken. And behold, all was darkness such that there was no light anywhere, and all was cold once more. Logan's Run, A Primer, by Jalita Clegg. Look, look, see, see, see Logan. Logan is running. Run, Logan, run, 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 run. Oh, oh, see Timmy run. Bad Timmy. Timmy is over 21. Timmy must die. See Logan shoot Timmy. Look, look, see, see. Oh, oh, oh. Bad Logan. Mother will not like the mess. Oh, oh, oh. See Logan turn 21. See Logan run. Run, Logan, run. Run, run, run. The end.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Zombie Convention Etiquette, brought to you by our host, Miss Manners herself, Jalita Clegg. Etiquette rule number one, do not eat the committee's brains. The committee members' brains have been so stressed by planning and executing the convention that they will taste overcooked and fried, not tasty. Wait a week, then eat their brains. Rule number two, make sure your lips are glued on tightly before participating in a panel. Having your lips stick to the microphone when you pass it to your fellow panelists is a definite no-no in the Manners book. Miss Manners would be so disappointed in you. Having them land in your water cup is also not appropriate. Rule number three, ditto for eyeballs. Rule number four, try not to shamble in the hallways. Most conventions have very crowded hallways. You may lose more than a few digits and appendages trying to shamble through the crowd. Of course, this may be intentional if you have many fans who want a piece of you. Rule number five, request plenty of rosemary for your brains at banquets. Most venues are happy to oblige. Not only does it improve the flavor of the brains, but it also helps with that nasty brain breath. Rule number six, prominently carry a copy of a literary classic such as Wuthering Heights or Little Women. People will assume you are a cultured and civilized zombie, making it much easier to eat their brains. Rule number seven, always wear a bucket on your head. This will protect you from evil mind rays. Wait, you don't have a brain, so they won't affect you anyway. Wear it as a fashion statement instead. Rule number 8. Watch out for fruit and vegetable trays. Everyone knows that zombies and vegetable matter are like mixing jello with explosives. Both lose, and the mess is horrendous. Finally, children under the age of 12 are not appropriate food sources. Go for the teenagers instead. No one will notice if their brains go missing. Thank you for joining us for this small introduction to zombie etiquette. This is your host, Miss Manners Jelita Clegg, saying good night and good eating.
Simple Advice for Writers by Jelita Clegg. Never write while under the influence of cold medication. This should be self-explanatory. What you write is highly entertaining, but usually makes very little sense when read in the light of day. Never write while under the influence of children. Your dialogue ends up reading something like this. "Kiss me," she whispered, passion glittering in her eyes. "Quit kicking the cat!" "Oh, my dearest darling, stop squishing peas into the carpet!" "I don't care what your brother said. He is not stealing your air when he breathes." Her bosom heaved as his hand slapped his sister. "I'll give you something to scream about, you little monsters!" The end.
Captive Breeders by Elaine Isaac. The wailing of a griffin in heat is a cacophony unappreciated by the average human. Cat owners may be familiar with the pleading wail of the female roaming the neighborhood, twisting her tail and thrusting up her hips to anything that might pass for a tom. Sheba's behavior was no less lascivious, but on a quite different scale. She towered over me, her tawny lion's back about at the height of my eyes, her dark wings spanning an average basketball court. Right now, her finely feathered eagle's head hovered near my midriff, her vast beak gaping as she cried out for love, or at least an end to her misery. Occasionally she butted me, leaving tufts of pale down on my coveralls and knocking me into the rail. Love, misery, same difference. If she'd ever had a fiancé like mine, his exotic good looks hiding the betrayal in his heart, she'd rather suffer in silence than try to bring on the men. At least a griffin never seduced someone just to try to steal their job. But I cut off that line of thought. Rajiv was out of my life. It was just today's breeding that brought him to mind, when I'd rather forget I ever met him. This new guy, on the other hand, stood a little too close, just staring. Obviously, he'd never owned a cat. "Look," I said, demanding his attention with a rap on the rail in front of him. "Where's Martinez?" "Got kicked by a horse yesterday, down for at least a week." "At least tell me you're a large animal vet." The guy blinked. "They said you were working with birds." Sheba scrubbed her feathery head against my back, shoving me into the wall and squashing my breasts. "Birds, right." I flipped the tufted lion's tail out of my face. "I'm researching the breeding habits of Rhode Island Reds," he murmured, his eyes tracking Sheba. He wore a gold cross at his throat, toying with it now between his nervous fingers. "Right, chicken man. Here's the drill. This is a griffin. She wants sex. Now, in a minute or so, another griffin is going to come through that gate. He wants her. The state says we need a vet present, so here you are. Stay the hell out of the way." He nodded, a shock of dark hair sliding across his brow. He'd be cute once he picked his jaw up off the ground. Sheba rubbed her head against my spine like a massaging lawnmower. I gritted my teeth. "And put that cross away. A griffin will pick gold over sex almost every time. At least his jewelry didn't have any gemstones, or the Tom would never get down to business." "Dr. Liz, great to see you again." A tall, dark man pushed through the door behind the vet. "Rajiv, what else could go wrong?" "Yeah, great. I asked for anyone but you." "Turns out I'm the best man for the job." He offered a feral grin. Ignoring the reference to his thwarted ambitions, I allowed Sheba's pitiful cries to bring me back to focus. "Who did you bring?" "Don't worry about it. The Tom is raring to go." He turned to the chicken man. "You must be the vet. Ever witnessed a session before?" Before the vet had time to answer, Rajiv turned away and slipped under the bar into the narrow breeding chute. Sheba fixed him with her golden gaze and yowled. "She's a beauty. May I?" I walked to stand by Sheba's head, rubbing the top of her sharp beak to calm her. "I know, baby. Don't worry. There's a Tom waiting for you, right outside those doors. I hope he treats you better than my last boyfriend." Rajiv narrowed his eyes at me. "Keep your broken heart to yourself." Returning to his inspection of Sheba, he crooned, "Oh, yes, Henry's gonna like you." "Henry?" I squeaked. "Not Henry the Eighth." Rajiv shrugged. "He's our top candidate." "Bullshit. He's your favorite." "Or," I added to myself, "you're just trying to make my life hell." "We registered for Richard." "Richard?" interrupted the chicken man. "Who's that?" Richard the Lionheart. All the Griffins are named for royalty. Henry the Eighth. That doesn't sound good. He used to be Henry the Fifth. Then he ripped the head off his bride. Chicken Man took a step back. Right. From behind the gate, something roared. The hairs rose on the back of my neck, but Sheba answered with a cry of need so fierce her breath steamed my side. She bowed her forelegs, talons raking the ground before her. Showtime, Rajiv muttered. Then he favored me with another tight, nasty smile as we guided Sheba into the higher section, briefly out of sight of the observation area. Here, I think you should keep this. He tucked a packet into my chest pocket. Before I had a chance to ask what it was, Rajiv strode toward the gate at the other end of the enclosure. He stepped aside as the Tom pelted through the door. It roared again, its wings swooped outward. I scrambled toward the bar. One wing slapped me hard, tossing me into the sawdust underfoot, trapped between the griffin and his mate. Rajiv! I howled, clawing my way to my knees. Henry's head swung downward, taking my breath away. Like most of the Ural griffins, Henry was a golden, dark, gleaming feathers forming a dense mane over his taloned forelegs. I froze, waiting for his attention to go back to Sheba. She cried out for him, but he paid her no heed. Instead, his beak snicked open and closed. Then he dove for me. A groove of pain ground across my shoulder, blood streaming, and I screamed, trying to knock aside his enormous head. One talon slapped down on me, pinning me. Then a hand interposed, trembling, gripping something that gleamed. "Come on, you feather brain," someone muttered near my ear. The golden cross wiggled, and Henry reared back to snag it. Instead, the hand flung the cross away, toward Sheba. The Tom leapt away from me. He bounded a few steps forward, and found himself face to tail with an eager lady. Abandoning the lust for treasure, Henry sprang upon her, and nature took its course. Strong hands grabbed me and pulled me back underneath the rail. I found myself staring up at the face of the veterinarian, meeting his encouraging smile. "You'll be fine," he murmured, keeping his steadying grip on my shoulders. "Just fine." Gazing up at him like that, I started to think it might be true. He shifted his grip and helped me to my feet, where I turned on Rajiv. "You bastard! You should have held the gate until I was clear." "Oh, Liz, I'm so sorry!" He came to wrap me in his embrace, one hand feeling me up as if we were still dating. I remembered the packet and snatched it from my pocket just before his roving hands reached their mark. I opened it into my palm, a cool, heavy band of gold topped with a diamond, the engagement ring I had flung back at Rajiv when I found out what he really wanted. The vet lunged forward, but I got there first, landing Rajiv with a fist to the side of his head. He slammed into the wall and sprawled on the ground. Shaking out my hand, I listened to the happy grunting and rustling of the running griffins behind us. At least some good might come of this. Tossing the ring out the door, I faced the veterinarian. Not so chicken after all. "Thanks. You probably saved my life." He gave a slight shrug. "Some animals just don't know what to treasure." "What's your name?" At that, the vet chuckled, and the slightest heat touched his cheeks. "Richard." Sheba gave a final sustained cry, and a few feathers drifted down over us, just as something new gave wing in my heart.
Thank you for joining us at the Broad Pod, sponsored by Broad Universe, the voice for women writing speculative fiction. My name is Tricia Wooldridge, and you can find out more about me at www.anovelfriend.com. For more information about Broad Universe, or the woman you heard in this episode, go to www.broaduniverse.org. Until the next episode of the Broad Pod, keep broadening your reading horizons.
This recording is copyright Broad Universe 2010. All readings are copyright their respective authors. Please respect our intellectual property. Thank you.